You need to go ahead and retain your mask, please. You need to retain your mask, please. Okay, Mr. Aguilar.
Good morning, Your Honor. And may it please the court. Because of my abbreviated amount of time, forgive me for getting right to the issues, but there's two main points I'd like to make. First is that the video evidence provided clear, blatant, and overwhelming video evidence that Mr. Soto spit on the face of Officer Zuniga. That is at 1:11:40. At that time, you can see and you can hear viscerally the sound of spitting on his face. The second point I'd like to make or emphasize is that at best, Mr. Soto focuses on cases involving officers after encountering passive resistance rather than action taken in response to the spitting on the face of an officer who then has to get control of a situation. Zuniga was not responding to resistance. At that point, he was simply trying to get control of a situation. The cases he wants to cite have more to do with reacting to passive resistance. He was only trying to get control of the situation. What I would ask the court to consider is once an officer has been spit on, in this circumstance, Officer Zuniga, he has three options. The first, he could drive off without a seatbelt, which would be unlawful, dangerous, and against department policy. Second, he could wait for help, but there's no guarantee that he won't be spit upon again. And third, he can remove Soto, place him on the ground to secure him, and wait for assistance and a spit guard. We should not be reviewing or second-guessing a split-second decision made by an officer at the scene in an attempt to get control of a circumstance. I'd refer the court to my reply brief at 3, in which Zuniga's use of force in removing him from the vehicle and putting him on the ground was reasonable.
Okay, I have a more basic question. The district court said there were factual disputes that mattered to the question of qualified immunity, etc. What is that fact dispute that the district court found? Because I had trouble finding the find.
Honestly, Your Honor, I have no idea. Okay. And the problem with that is I hear this a lot. Oh, there's fact issues, as a way of just avoiding identifying what the fact issues are. I have not seen any because the unequivocal video evidence shows what the facts are. As best I could figure, the fact issue would be whether he spit, but the video shows that. What degree of force was used, but the video shows that. What happened after that, but the video shows that. And when the video provides unequivocal evidence to support that, there are no fact issues. That is part of the jurisdictional question presented by Mr. Kalinin, saying that because there's a fact issue, the court doesn't have jurisdiction.
No, that's why I'm asking about it. I want to know, because we cannot decide the genuineness of the determination of a fact issue, but we can decide the materiality. But to decide the materiality, we have to know the material. And I'm just struggling because I don't see where the district court said, I think there's a dispute over whether X happened or whether Y happened. So that's the part that I'm trying to understand. Where is that? Is that in the record? Can I find it? Did I miss it? I'm just trying to get there.
I could not find it. The judge did not identify it in his order.
Okay, so should we remand for the district court to tell us what the fact dispute is or the fact?
I don't think the court needs to because we get back to the video evidence. He cannot provide a sham affidavit saying that, oh, something happened or didn't happen when you have the specific.
No, I know, but if we're trying to determine whether, you know, the materiality of the factual dispute that led to the district court's ruling, don't we need to know what the fact dispute is? Even if it ultimately is incorrect, That's a separate question. The genuineness of the fact dispute is not something we can determine, but the materiality is. If he said, well, there's a disagreement about whether his jacket was red or brown, and that doesn't matter in the case, then we would say, well, okay, maybe there's a dispute, but it's not material.
I agree, Your Honor. However, what I would point out is that it's the plaintiff in this case burden to establish the officer is not entitled to qualified immunity. To get past that entitlement, he's got to identify a fact issue, not necessarily the court, but the plaintiff in this case would have to identify the fact issue to say that is the fact issue and this is why. The qualified immunity cases we submitted, including most recently Van v. South Avon and Trevino v. Hintz, provide that the failure to identify a case that is pretty much whatever his facts are alleged, that specifically show that those facts would establish constitutional violation. I would actually specifically refer the court to the Rich v. Palco case, in which the court said that where a suspect repeatedly spits at officers and he's taken down from the chair to the floor in a process, hits the suspect on a cabinet on the way down, in that circumstance, there's no clearly established constitutional violation. They have not identified whatever the facts are that they want to say present a fact issue or present facts that would be entitled them to avoid qualified immunity. They have not identified any case that would say this is close enough and therefore they're entitled to overcome the qualified immunity assumption.
Mr. Aguilar, is there any evidence in the record that either of these officers intentionally used force on Mr. Soto's face? On his face.
No, Your Honor, what happened was, if you could see the video, and I've got the specific timeline on my reply brief at 3, you show them holding him down for about 66 seconds. What happens is they pull him out of the video. In the video, you could see, they pull him out of the vehicle, place him on the ground. Officer Zuniga puts his knee on the suspect's back for a moment to get control of him. You could see him go like this with his sleeve to wipe his spit off his face. And you see him holding him down with his hands, but you never see him going like this up and down with his hands, and you never see him doing anything other than struggling to get him secured on the ground to hold him down. That's the most you see in the video of anything happening, although they make allegations in the briefing and in their pleadings that he jumped up and down on him and that he struck him several times with his hands. There's no evidence of that. There's no testimony of that. Mr. Soto specifically said he couldn't remember what had happened, and he did agree that he had spit, but he says it's not in the direction of the officer. The evidence itself does not show anything actually happening, jumping up and down the officer and on the suspect, and the entire incident occurred in less than 2 minutes. Within 2 minutes, everything was okay. They had calmed down, and within 9 minutes, they had picked him up and put him back in the car. After that, Mr. Soto continued speaking, joking, it seems, about what had happened and all that. So there's no evidence that he was violently injured. He refused ambulance service at the scene. He later went to the hospital, and after that, my understanding is he did not see any other medical providers.
There's no evidence that his face would have been damaged by the spit guard.
I'm sorry, say it again?
There's no evidence that his face could have been damaged by putting the spit guard.
No, Your Honor, the spit guard itself is like a ski mask, and then on top of that is the red man suit, which looked like a lacrosse helmet. It's a foam helmet, but that would not have hit him. The injury to his face, he had a hairline. Oh, I'm sorry, may I finish my?
Yeah, finish your sentence.
The injury that he had was a hairline fracture on his cheek and to his tooth, and that was. My understanding was when he was first taken down and put on the ground.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Aguilar. You've saved a short time for rebuttal. Mr. Gleason.
Good morning. May it please the court. Jimmy Gleason on behalf of Appellant Ulysses Bautista. Your Honor, Mr. Bautista is claiming qualified immunity, and as the court well knows, that shifts the burden to the plaintiff to establish each of the three required elements. Would like to walk you through the factual situation from my client's particular perspective. It is different in fundamental and important ways from Mr. Aguilar's.
Do you have any reference to what the district court found the fact dispute was?
No, Your Honor, I do not.
So you don't have it either. So we'll ask your opponent. So go on.
Mr. Bautista did not effectuate the stop. He came in to provide cover in the bar district at 1 o'clock in the morning. He was in a position where he was observing the activities of his fellow officer and making sure that there were no problems. From his position, he was able to watch Mr. Soto perform field sobriety tests. Based on his training and experience, he was of the opinion that he was too intoxicated to drive. He watched his fellow officer provide a portable breathalyzer test. Subsequent to that, he was placed under arrest. The only reasonable conclusion that a reasonable officer in that situation could take away from it was that there was probable cause for an arrest for driving while impaired. He was placed in cuffs. He was moved to the patrol vehicle. As he was getting into the patrol vehicle, Mr. Bautista was 5 to 8 feet behind, and it is visible on the video, from where Mr. Zuniga was at when he was placing Mr. Soto into the vehicle. It is clearly audible, Your Honors, on the video that there was a spit. It's 100% irrelevant, and perhaps, Judge Haynes, this might address your concern regarding the materiality of the fact dispute. It doesn't matter, from my client's perspective, whether he spat at him or spat on him. He heard the spat. From the position he was at, he had a reasonable belief that his fellow officer had been assaulted, that this individual was resisting arrest. Literally within seconds, my client, and in fact, I think if you actually look from the time of the spit to the time Mr. Soto is on the ground, it's less than 4 seconds. My client was behind, was not in a position to interfere, merely to observe. He gets on the ground. Now, there is a fact dispute, I think, that plaintiff will bring up as to whether or not he was continuing to struggle once he was on the ground. But in approximately 11 seconds later, my client kicked him one time. It is in the record that based on his experience and training, my client understood that intoxicated persons behave in erratic manners, that they are dangerous, that he has witnessed people who are handcuffed use weapons. All of these are reasonable experiences, reasonably objective understanding of an experienced law enforcement officer. Based on that, he determined there was a need for the minimal application of compliance force. One kick, Your Honor. One kick with a tennis shoe clad foot. One kick with a tennis shoe clad foot to the oblique area, a green zone, so named because by kicking a green zone versus a red zone, it is a deliberate effort by the law enforcement officer to inflict compliance rather than inflicting an injury. Those are the relevant facts from my client's perspective. Now, addressing the three elements of excessive force, the first was there an injury? Mr. Soto admitted during his deposition that the only complaint he had regarding my client was that kick. The only injury he claims was bruised ribs and photographs of those bruised ribs. And of course, when I asked him about the photographs, he said he'd given them to his attorney, but they weren't in the record. They were never supplied. And even if they were, the video clearly shows, consistent with my client's testimony, that the one kick was in the oblique area. The injury at best is de minimis. The second problem, of course, is that the injuries that occurred were directly related to the application of force. The injury, Judge Clement, that you were inquiring about earlier on the face, in all likelihood occurred when Officer Zuniga pulled Mr. Soto out of the car. No one is suggesting that my client inflicted that particular injury. Third, and of course it's the more interesting matter for argument, is the objective test as to the unreasonableness of my client's behavior. Your Honor, using the familiar Graham test, Mr. Soto had committed at least 3 crimes that my client reasonably believed and had probable cause to assume, or to conclude rather, that had been committed: driving while impaired, resisting arrest, assaulting a police officer. Each of these incidents were escalating in nature. Even though Mr. Soto was handcuffed while he was laying in the street, it didn't mean that he wasn't an immediate threat. He continued to move around, and based on my client's experience, he knew that handcuffed persons can be a threat. If he had thrashed around and injured himself, we might be having a conversation about, well, you failed to restrain him in a proper manner. But that isn't the case here. He was actively resisting, and unlike the cases that the appellee cites in his brief, this was a situation where the officers responded to a high and active level of resistance rather than being the ones who actually created the increasing level and escalating level of the use of force. Your Honor, I would conclude by noting that with respect to the bystander liability, Mr. Soto has failed to cite even a single case. I would direct you to the Joseph case that was recently decided, I believe in late 2020, that shows that where you fail to even advance the argument regarding bystander liability with supporting casework, that it necessarily fails. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gleason. You've saved a short time for rebuttal. Mr. Johnson?
Good morning, and may it please the court. Appellee presents two primary issues on appeal. First is that under controlling Supreme Court precedent, appellants have not established jurisdiction for their interlocutory appeal, so this court should dispose of it out of hand. This is so because they were denied summary judgment on a purely factual basis.
And that factual basis is what?
Many
not
things.
Not by you, but what the district court said.
Your Honor, the district court mentioned factual issues, the existence of factual issues and jury issues at least 22 pages of the transcript. I can give you all the sites to.
But what reference. Were they? What were the fact issues? Not are there fact issues? You said that, but what were they?
Right. So the district court didn't distill in any kind of clear list what the fact issues are, but the fact issues from even both opposing counsel's presentations are absolutely clear, which is the objective reasonableness of the force.
Okay, that's not a fact issue. That's a legal question. What else?
It also includes the whether or not there was resistance. Opposing counsel had different arguments about what and how much resistance there was, whether or not there was resistance, and the effect of it. So that's absolutely a fact issue for a jury to determine. And in addition, you know, there's much talk about spit and undisputed facts and this and that and the other. What is not clear in the video, and I slowed down the video, I watched it at half speed, frame by frame, full speed, any way that you can find it. Spit is not visible in the video, and my client...
Oh, yes, it is. You can see that he's spitting.
Either way,
no, he says he admitted that he spat, but he said it wasn't at the officer. It was sort of towards the officer, but not at the officer, and blah, blah, blah. But there was clearly a spit.
Even, you know, whether or not there was spit, the qualified immunity analysis remains the same, as does the jurisdiction.
No, it kind of doesn't, because if he was sitting calmly in the car and the officer needs to put on the seatbelt, and then just throws him on the ground and starts beating him, that's a problem, okay? But if he is resisting that by spitting and whatever else he's doing, that's when there becomes a problem. So yes, it does matter when you're resisting versus when you're sitting there calmly.
So, Your Honor, the phrasing of your question speaks to the fact issue itself. You said, you know, when he was spitting and whatever else he was doing, you know, qualifying as resistance. First of all, we argue that spitting itself is not necessarily an act of resistance, first of all, and secondly, the whatever else was going on, both in terms of at the time of the alleged spitting and while he was on the ground, whether or not that was resistance is absolutely a fact issue that a jury needs to determine whether or not him writhing in pain was resistance or him writhing in pain. And if it was resistance, whether or not it was active or passive resistance over the course of the 9 minutes that he was held on the ground by the knees of the officers. And even if this court decided that you know, the facts are undisputed, as my friends on the other side have argued with respect to the video evidence, that doesn't necessarily create interlocutory jurisdiction for this court, because what the Supreme Court said in Ortiz is that even when there is an undisputed factual record, what interlocutory appeals for unqualified immunity look for are purely legal arguments about the substance and clarity of existing law, which is
right. And so the objective reasonableness. So was it reasonable for them to take him down when he spat at them? That is something we can address. You know, if there are fact issues that the district court determined, then we can't decide the genuineness of that, but we can decide the materiality. Like I said, the red and brown jacket, we could say, I don't think there's a dispute over red versus brown. We cannot say that. That's a genuineness question, but we can say it is immaterial whether his jacket was red or brown. So that's the point I'm not trying to be difficult here, but I am very concerned about the fact that I don't know what the district court found, and how am I supposed to assess the materiality of that if I don't know what it is?
Right.
So then the question is, do we need to make a limited remand for the district court to make that determination, or is there something here we can just decide on? You're saying we can't decide anything because we lack jurisdiction, but your lack of jurisdiction argument is based on his factual dispute finding, and we don't know what that is.
Right. So a limited remand could absolutely be appropriate, but whether or not this court does, you know, if this court decides that there is in fact jurisdiction, and that this is an issue of materiality, Appelli does still win on the merits in with respect to overcoming qualified immunity. So to answer your question directly, yes, a limited remand would be appropriate, giving the district court the opportunity to clarify what it meant when it said on 22 separate pages of the transcript that there are fact issues, it can't be a fact finder, it needs a jury. I believe what this court would find is that, you know, the fact issues about whether or not there is resistance, the timing, the justifications, the trustworthiness of the depositions and the testimony of the officers and
now what about experts. The fact that we have the video, and so even if there's a dispute between the parties, when the video is clear, we just follow the video. How does that play into the? Maybe we don't need a limited remand because we have an unlimited video.
Absolutely. When the video is clear, that's one thing, but the video is not clear as to the entire duration of the time that Mr. Soto had been thrown to the ground and was being pinned down by the officers. For that entire 9 minutes, it's what's going on in the video during that portion is not so crystal clear that there can't be multiple interpretations. And when there are multiple interpretations of a video, that is for a fact finder to interpret and for a fact finder to find whose testimony, whose version of events is more credible. With respect to qualified immunity in particular, it has been clearly established in the circuit since at least 2013 that it is objectively unreasonable for officers to tackle an individual who is not fleeing, not violent, not aggressive, and only offering minor resistance. That's Trammell versus Frugge, this circuit's case in 2017. And the only possible justification for any force that was used was the alleged incident of spitting. And that does not justify 9 minutes of being thrown on the ground face first, being pinned down, and being kicked. Whatever Officer Batista and Officer Zuniga claim about, you know, him moving around on the ground was him resisting or trying to get away, as opposed to writhing in pain, which would be in line with his screaming in pain, and their own judgments and where Mr. Soto was kicked, and whether it was the red zone or the green zone, and the extent of his injuries, those are all also fact issues. But also it shows that it was a high degree of force in response to an action in the form of the alleged spitting that is not a form of resistance. It's not a form of trying to get away. It's not a form of fleeing. And to the extent that it even could be classified as resistance, it is certainly not active resistance. It's not the same as other cases, which we cited in our response brief, that involve things like kicking, headbutting, trying to run away, things like that. So we have a high degree of force, which, as Mr. Batista's attorney pointed out, occurred, the first instance of this high degree of force occurred within 4 seconds after the alleged spitting. That is a very fast, immediate escalation, which this court has, in Newman versus Gordry, said that the speed of escalation and whether or not there were de-escalation tactics, whether or not there was negotiation, lower uses of force, a proper escalation, is absolutely something that should be considered in the qualified immunity analysis. So we have the degree of force, we have the speed with which the force was used. We also have the lack of resistance and lack of attempt to flee. You know, whether or not he was intoxicated, and intoxicated people generally can be unpredictable, we don't have evidence of the officers being injured. We don't have evidence of Mr. Soto trying to get up and run away. We don't have evidence of Mr. Soto trying to escape the pin that he was in via, you know, the officers alternating, dropping their weight on him with their knee toward the, you know, top of his shoulders, back of his head area. So we have no resistance there. And each use of force requires its own justification. So when we're looking at the kick by Officer Batista in particular, we have to see what caused the kick. And it can't just be a generalized fear of maybe this person could possibly do something that might create a security situation. The video shows, and a jury could find that the video shows, that there was no security risk once he was out of the car and on the ground. The video also shows that he was no security risk when he was in the car. The only thing the officers needed to do at that point was finish putting his seatbelt on and close the door, and then the incident is concluded at that point. And we can see that because they took him out of the car and immediately used force, you know, that there was no de-escalation. There are lower uses of force that could have been used, could have been considered, but were utterly ignored and were not used or considered by these officers here. Like I said, there are numerous things that they could have done, including covering his mouth, put on the seatbelt, and close the door. And additionally, there was the fact that apart from the alleged spitting, Mr. Soto was compliant, defenseless, handcuffed, and like I said, in the car before he was placed, as a generous term, on the ground, slammed onto the ground. So this falls squarely within the set of cases that this court has routinely determined are not entitled to qualified immunity. Beyond that, the use of the red man suit was itself a continuing use of force, insofar as it further aggravated Mr. Soto's broken face. Because it was not a necessary tool to effectuate the goal of not being further spit upon, the spit guard did that. Mr. Soto testified that it was, you know, uncomfortable and this and that and the other, but, you know, that itself is not a use of force. The red man suit that further aggravated the injuries and that he eventually convinced the officers to take off was a continuing use of force without, again, an additional justification. So, just to summarize, what the case law says when officers are responding to these on-the-street responses. This court has routinely and consistently looked at things like whether or not the suspect was handcuffed, whether or not the suspect was resisting, the timing of the force, the objective actions that were taken by a suspect to justify each use of force. Ramirez versus Martinez, for example, this court was sure to emphasize that the use of a taser after the suspect was already handcuffed, already on the ground, was even more clearly excessive than what led to the suspect in that case being handcuffed. And we have the exact same thing here. Mr. Soto was already handcuffed, Mr. Soto was already on the ground, and yet he was kicked. And again, in Newman, the determining factor there was the speed of the escalation. And then even on a broader scale, there are cases like Cooper versus Brown that have said unequivocally that the factor analysis of determining whether or not there was excessive force can itself be a means of overcoming qualified immunity. So appellee has cited six examples that are similar to this one where we're seeing low levels of resistance, a controlled and mostly compliant suspect in the face of a high degree of force, and three counterexamples where there is actually a degree of force, there is actually a justification to use force to control a situation, none of which are present here. So that more than overcomes the qualified immunity standard that this court, of course, has to contend with. So between the fact that, you know, there are open factual questions that, of course, the district court can and should be able to clarify, and the fact that, you know, Mr. Soto was handcuffed, defenseless, they knew that he was unarmed, and again, aside from the alleged spitting, had been compliant, they decided to throw him on the ground face first and kick him while he was down anyway. And additionally, with respect to fact issues, one of the fact issues is when the face break occurred. My friends on the other side testified to the fact that, you know, the break of his face can't be attributed to Mr. Batista because it, quote, likely occurred when he was thrown face first onto the ground, but that's not clear from the record and a fact issue for the jury to decide what injuries were sustained and when. And Apelli further argues that bruised ribs are a more than de minimis injury because of the seriousness of the pain experienced, as well as the potential for damage to that area. But it's a common schoolyard principle that you should not kick somebody when they're down, which apparently is lost on the McAllen Police Department. And it's for these reasons and because of the speed of the escalation, the degree of the force, the compliance of Mr. Soto apart from the alleged spitting, the duration of the force. It's for all of these reasons that Apelli has clearly and easily overcome qualified immunity. Overcome qualified immunity. The district court did get it right in that respect, and this court should reverse and remand so that these fact issues can be sussed out by a jury.
We should reverse?
Excuse me. I'm used to being the appellant. We're commonly the appellants. This court should affirm and remand for further proceedings.
Okay.
Thank you for helping me clarify, Your Honor. This court should affirm the district court's correct decision and remand for further proceedings and a possible jury trial.
I thought you'd be telling us that we should dismiss the appeal for want of jurisdiction because of a disputed issue of material fact.
Yes. It's an alternative, you know, it's an alternative argument in terms of this court should dismiss the appeal and either remand for the district court to clarify, as Judge Haynes suggested, or if this court chooses to exercise jurisdiction at this point without further clarification, then it has everything that it needs in front of it to affirm the district court's correct judgment and proceed to a jury trial and instigate those further proceedings.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Aguilar, you saved time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. First of all, let me make clear that I'm asking the court to reverse and render the judgment of the district court below. Second, I'd like to point out that this is not a passive resistance case. This is a takedown case. The question the court is having to evaluate is whether the degree of force used was reasonable in light of the fact of a need for a takedown at that particular moment.
Okay, but the argument made was more than just the takedown. It's once he's down, what y'all are doing.
And I think if you look at the evidence that was presented, the evidence provides that the only injury that occurred was when he was taken down. There was some scuffling on the ground, and there's plenty of cases that say when the suspect is still scuffling, there can be additional injury. But he hasn't identified any additional injury that occurred on the scuffling or after, whether there was passive resistance or not. He was on the ground, and the officer was trying to simply to hold him down while they awaited the spit guard to come from the supervisor. He did not have it there with him. The second point that I'd like to make, and most importantly, this is a summary judgment case that the court reviews de novo. The court reviews the evidence in light of the fact most favorable to the plaintiff, but it's got to review evidence, not simply allegations. The evidence has to show that there's some prior case law based on similar cases, based on similar factual allegations, similar evidence, either under Rivas Villegas, Kiesler, or Emmons. There's a factual scenario similar to this scenario that would show that this officer's action in taking him down and putting him to the ground, arranging him while he's might be squirming on the ground, whether the actions of that particular officer in doing those things that the evidence shows happened violated his constitutional rights. There is no such case. For that matter, as I mentioned earlier, the closest case is the Rich v. Palco case, which was very similar in fact, and the court found there was no violation. Again, I'd ask the court to reverse and render.
All right, thank you, Mr. Aguilar. Mr. Gleason for rebuttal.
I would respectfully submit that there are no material facts in dispute with respect to my client. The suggestion that there is anything in the record that suggests that my client caused the facial injury to Mr. Soto is false. It simply isn't there. Mr. Soto admitted that the only complaint he had with my client was the one kick. My client testified, and it's in the record, one kick. It's visible plainly in the video. It's to the oblique.
But is it okay to kick someone that you don't have a reason to kick?
Your Honor, I believe he did have a reason to kick him. He kicked him for compliance.
So they say that's the dispute, that whether he was really resisting or whether he was just kind of like in pain, kind of going like this.
Your Honor, there is significant Fifth Circuit precedent that talks about the temporal element of the application of force. All of this happened, the kick happened within 15 seconds of the spit. The entire use of force incident was around a minute. That's all. They claim, which is contradicted plainly by the videotape, that they bounced up and down on him for 9 minutes. In fact, they claim that my client bounced up and down on 9 minutes in the pleadings. But they don't have any facts, because it didn't happen. If you look at the videotape, and I described this in my brief, there were other police officers on the scene. My client is seen leaving while the other officer is still on top of him, and he's gone. And yet they claim in their pleadings that these two officers took turns jumping up and down on him. That's not evidence. It's simply not evidence. So the suggestion that it is a material fact question as to whether my client or their client or somebody else did it, it's irrelevant to my client's case. Your Honor, Ortiz simply doesn't apply in this situation. Ortiz was a situation where the court found that the appellant had essentially waived qualified immunity because they failed to raise it pre-trial. The Ortiz case, procedurally, was post-trial. An entirely different situation here. If we were to extend the logic of the appellee's argument regarding the jurisdictional question, anytime a district court judge says there's a fact dispute, doesn't enter a specific finding of facts, then the appellate court is beholden to deny jurisdiction.
Should we do a limited remand? I'm not talking about an affirmative remand. I'm talking about a limited remand to find out what the heck do you think the fact is.
And I appreciate that, and in circumstances where there are genuine material issues of material fact, it would be appropriate. In this case, with respect to my client, the material facts are simply not in dispute. It was one kick, temporally related to an incident of escalating violence and criminality on the part of the plaintiff. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Gleason. Your case, both of today's cases, are under submission. And the court is in recess under the usual order.